Hello and welcome once more to the International Soccer Preview by Soccer Files Canada. I'm Kevin.
And I'm Connor. Today we will be updating Costa Rica in the final round of CONCACAF qualifying for World Cup 2022. Before the round, we did a team preview and a player preview for each team. We won't be repeating all that information here, but we do urge you to check out those podcasts at our website at soccerfiles.captivate.fm. So we'll begin with a summary of the information that we covered in each of those podcasts. We give a bit more detailed summary in our first podcast of this series, which was for Canada's team.
Right, so a bit of a shorter summary here, but if you want the whole thing, you can check out Canada. But in the first set of podcasts, in the team podcast, we gave some information on the country, so its location and population. A summary of their history in World Cup competition and in regional competition, with a bit of a closer look at their recent history in those competitions. We took a brief look at their players in the team podcast, especially focused on their goal scorers. And then we looked at the team's ranking and head-to-head record with the other teams in this group. And finally, we had a discussion of their schedule and their prospects.
Right. And for each of the player podcasts, we organized the team into positions and looked at the players who had been filling those positions in recent times. We gave some biographical information on them, specifically their history with the national team, and predicted who were the main candidates for each position. Again, in this podcast, we won't be repeating all of that. Rather, we will be looking back on how this round has gone for each team and how correct we were in our predictions of their performance and players. At times we were right, but sometimes players we expected to be used were not and new players came in.
Right. So we're urging listeners to regard this as a companion podcast to those first two podcasts. We won't be repeating biographical information for players discussed in the first podcast, but we will give that information for any new players here.
And finally, we'll look towards the future and discuss the prospects of teams and players from this midpoint forward. So let's begin. Again, we're looking here at Costa Rica after 8 of 14 games played.
All right, and let's take a look at how they've done in their games. And just two wins there, Connor, two home wins and no wins on the road, two draws and two losses.
Yeah, they sit with a record of 2 wins, 3 draws, and 3 losses overall. And it took them until their fifth game, a home match against El Salvador, for them to get their first win, a 2-1 victory. They also won their most recent game, game 8, against Honduras, but they snatched the win at 95 minutes. So, to win 2-1, so a very late show for Costa Rica there. They got off to a bit of a slow start, a draw in Panama, followed by a loss in Mexico, a loss to Mexico at home, a home draw with Jamaica, and another home draw against Honduras. And then in between their two wins were losses on the road to USA and Canada. They've kept it very tight. All their games have been either drawn or decided by just a single goal. They haven't scored many, haven't conceded too many either. But what do you make of their start so far?
Well, for a team that made it to the 2014 and the 2018 World Cup, this has got to be a disappointment. They were in sixth place after three games, actually seventh place after three games. And sixth place after that. Now they're in fifth, but we had pegged them as being, you know, one of the competitors for a qualifying spot. You know, traditionally kind of the third place team. We knew Canada would be a little bit stronger, but they've got to be disappointed with this. They're not only in fifth place, but actually 5 points out of an advancing position. How about you?
Yeah, I think it's been very disappointing. I think something that we've seen is, you know, they lost each of their games to Mexico, USA, and Canada. And I think in recent years, they've kind of fallen away from the better teams in the region. Looking back at the 2018 World Cup qualifying, the Hex there, they only lost one of their four games against Mexico and the United States. So they were competitive with those two teams. That hasn't been the case here. And really, when you look at past Gold Cups as well, they've seemed to be falling behind. The 2021 Gold Cup, they lost to Canada in the quarterfinals and kind of went out with a fairly feeble performance and lost that game 2-0. So I think that's been a bit of the story for them here, is they really haven't kept pace. And by that, they've kind of fallen away from the better teams in the region.
Yeah, I think so too. Even as far back as 2019 in the Gold Cup, they finished second in that group behind Haiti, which paired them with Mexico in the quarterfinals. They lost on penalties there. So that's two quarterfinal exits in a row. You know, for a team that if should be in the top four in the region and therefore should be at least making the semifinals. I'm going to put this down actually to the aging players that we talked about in our first podcast. We said they kind of not only have aging players, but also are not really doing much to rejuvenate. And we'll see how that's progressed since there. But, I mean, those players are quite good. Players like Brian Ruiz, who played in England for Fulham. But, you know, he's 36 years old, and that's kind of the story with this team. They're all good players in their prime, but you know, well into their 30s now. So that maybe leads us into the next section. We'll take a look at their goal scorers here. And only six goals there, Connor. Brian Ruiz is one of them. Celso Borges is another real veteran. Again, a great player, but past his prime for sure.
Yeah, six goals scored so far. You know, six goals in eight games is a pretty low return. And yeah, six different goal scorers. You're right, some familiar names there with Ruiz and Borges. So, you know, that's a problem area. And, you know, talking in terms of the aging team, is they really haven't found someone yet who looks like they're going to kind of pose that goal threat for them. You know, that's a key position where they need to replace it. And I'm not sure they've done that effectively, but we'll talk a little bit more about some of the candidates in that position later.
Yeah. The guy who got the winning goal is Gerson Torres, and that late winning goal, and you know, none of these guys are forwards. That was the point I was driving towards there. So they really do have a problem in the forward line, and getting goals. Six goals in eight games is not that good. Okay, should we move on to the player? Let's talk about the formations that they've been using a little bit. Do you want to summarize that?
Sure. The standard formation would seem to be the 4-2-3-1. They use that in their first three games and actually in their fifth and sixth game as well. They did modify game four away to Honduras with a five defenders, a 5-4-1. And then used a couple variations in the last two games, 4-5-1 against Canada, 4-4-2 against Honduras. So, you know, they, with a few exceptions, it tends to be four at the back, one up top, and then a bit more of a packed midfield.
Yeah, a pretty defensive team too, because we're going to see as we go through this that, you know, sometimes a lot of those, or usually a lot of those midfielders are kind of defensively minded, so... I alluded to kind of a problem with offense, and that's part of the problem right there. Okay, well, let's move on to the players, and we'll begin with the manager. That is Luis Fernando Suarez. Do you want to take that part, Connor?
Sure. So, in general, teams that are struggling make more changes, and this is a case kind of with all the bottom four. Changing formations and players in search of a solution. So, you know, that's something that we've seen with Costa Rica too. We noted previously that Costa Rica had some manager issues with Luis Fernando Suarez being installed shortly before Gold Cup 2021. He remains in place, but one wonders if he will do so if they continue to be in the bottom half of the table. One of the overriding themes we've touched on already is that players are aging. You know, So they have some good veterans, but recent performances show they are slowing down and not able to keep Costa Rica at the level that saw them reach the last two World Cups. The team in general is in need of rejuvenation, but we did not see much of it at the 2021 Gold Cup, which saw them rather easily defeated by Canada and knocked out at the quarterfinal stage, which is really not up to their expectations. So we'll, as we get into the players, I guess we'll see how Luis Fernando Suarez has been tackling this problem and whether he's been ushering in some of these new younger players that the team seems to need.
Right. So he remains as manager, but again, yeah, that probably depends on their performance here, do you think?
I think so. I think the expectations of Costa Rica, you know, are relatively high, having been to the World Cup and going on a great run in the World Cup in 2014. So, you know, this is not a team that, you know, should, you know, really expect to be 5 points behind the playoff spot at this stage. You know, they should at least be fighting for that spot. So I think the pressure is on.
Yeah, well, definitely. And one of the heroes of that 2014 World Cup was Keylor Navas. We were talking in the previous podcast about whether he or Lionel Moreira would be the starter, because Navas basically doesn't play Gold Cups. But the manager went with Keylor Navas nevertheless, and he started 7 of the 8 games. Actually, in game 6, he was injured and replaced at halftime by the first backup, Lionel Moreira. And Moreira also played game 7. And Moreira was on the bench for all of the games otherwise, so definitely the second string keeper. However, he was recently suspended for pushing a journalist. This happened at the club level, so I'm not sure if that will affect his international play, but I know he was suspended for a while, from at least from club play. The third string keeper is... sorry, I'm just putting the names up for our YouTube viewers. The third string keeper is unclear. Esteban Alvarado, who shared starting duties with Lionel Moreira in the Gold Cup, was out with a knee injury for the whole period. So Aaron Cruz was on the bench for all 8 games, and he had earned his first cap in a friendly in August. So a bit of youth there.
Right.
But not clear whether he is going to replace Esteban Alvarado when he becomes healthy again. Go ahead, Connor.
No, I'll just move us to the defenders.
Okay.
In the original podcast, we talked about a rotation among 4 players for the center back position. Costa Rica seems to have since settled on Oscar Duarte and Francisco Calvo as their center back pairing for all 8 games. Kendall Waston was added in game 4 when the formation was a 3-man central defense. That was his only start, but he was on the subs bench, sometimes unused for all 8 games. Giancarlo Gonzalez had also been in the mix, and he had 2 starts in the Gold Cup. He was on the bench for the first game and then off the squad, perhaps retiring at 33 years of age. We're not entirely sure there. He's been replaced by Juan Carlos Vargas, who was on the bench for all 8 games, but saw no action.
Right. Okay, so yeah, that was a bit unsettled, but that's actually a very steady steady back line. But let's take a look at the ages as we go through. Francisco Calvo is 29, and Oscar Duarte is... I don't know. That information is suddenly missing. I'll find out maybe while you take us through the left back situation.
Sure. We'll circle back there. The left backs, we speculated earlier that Ronald Matarrita might be taking over the position from Brian Oviedo. Matarrita was the starter in the Gold Cup, but then again, Oviedo had been injured. However, Oviedo resumed the position at the start of this round, but the two ended up sharing it. Oviedo starting half the games, including the first 3, and Matarrita starting the other 4. Matarrita also started game two against Mexico, playing as a left attacking midfielder. But those are really the two names in the mix, and we didn't really find any other viable candidates for the left back position.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, Brian Oviedo is actually not as old as I thought he was. He's 31, whereas Mariatta is about 27. But going back to that issue of the age of those players, Francisco Calvo is 29, Oscar Duarte is 32. And then going back even further to the goalkeepers, even the new guy who came in, Aaron Cruz, is 30 years old. There's not really a one of them among the goalkeepers who's under 30. So just to kind of reemphasize the aging theme that we're a bit worried about with Costa Rica.
Yeah, absolutely.
However, I do believe Richard Blanco, who is the main right back now, surprisingly, is a bit younger. Nope, he's 31. Anyway, the position had seemed to be firmly in Keisha Fuller's hands when we did our previous podcast. However, Richard Blanco seems to have swept the position away from him. So Blanco started 6 of the 8 games and Keisha Fuller the other 2. I think Fuller did play as a midfielder in at least one game. Now, perhaps the signs were there that we should have noticed when Blanco returned from a 9-year absence to play 3 of their 4 Nations League games in late 2019. But Fuller had resumed the role in the finals in June 2021 and in the following Gold Cup. So maybe that's still up in the air, but certainly in these 8 games, Blanco taking 6 of the 8 makes him our default choice there. The only other candidate for the position is Yael Lopez, who started a B-team game in the Gold Cup as a right back. That adds a bit of youth, given that he's just 23 years old. However, he was not called up for any of these qualifying games, and nor was Christian Gamboa, who held the position for a long time in the past. He last played in November of 2020. So both of those guys seem off the team, at least for the time being.
Yeah. And without belaboring the point too much, Keisha Fuller, who we thought would be the starter, is 27. Blanco is in his 30s. So it's kind of, that position has got older even. So again, problems with drafting in younger players.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to see at the end when we do look at, we kind of compile the new players that, you know, they generally don't use them and then they go back to using the veterans. So it's really kind of exacerbating the problem. Do you want to start with the midfielders, Connor?
Yeah, we'll start with the more defensive midfielders. David Guzman started the first 2 games, was on the bench for the 3rd, and then was off the squad. 24-year-old Jefferson Brenes was one we had highlighted as perhaps bringing some youth into the midfield. However, he started only game 3, but was also off the squad after that. Yeltsin Tejeda replaced one of them. He was injured for the Gold Cup and not selected for the first 3 games, but he returned and then started the last 5. And the other replacement was 21-year-old Orlando Gallo. Though listed as a right back, he subbed into games 4 and 5 and then earned a starting position in the midfield for games 7 and 8.
Yeah, and I should point out that he was starting in the midfield there rather than in his designated right back position. Well, defensive midfielders and central midfielders are pretty similar. So do you want to do the central ones too, Connor?
Yeah, and as you kind of mentioned, the position is difficult to separate from defensive midfielders, because they may play the same role, though kind of central midfielders is ostensibly a bit more attacking or at least more creative and playmaking. Veteran Celso Borja started the first 6 games, but was only the substitute for the last 2. Randall Leal is labeled as a left midfielder, and we'll deal with him in that category, but he did play centrally in game 1. Costa Rica made a big change for Game 7 in the cold of Canada, a game which we were at. Though they used various formations, Costa Rica changed from the 4-2-3-1 they had used in the previous two games to a 4-5-1 and changed many players, including taking Borges out and putting in two newcomers, Orlando Gallo, who we met above, and Houston Salas, both getting their first starts. And, you know, having been at the stadium and watched that game, Costa Rica, it was a very defensive position. The forward felt quite isolated. I'm not really sure, you know, what their strategy was, maybe counterattacking, but they really sat deep in that game against Canada. And then
honestly, it's hard not to get into the discussion here. I didn't realize it when I was sitting in the crowd, but or maybe I did. I just thought taking Borges out, who's a starter and a veteran, taking him out of the midfielder. I did realize they had pulled him out. I didn't realize they had put in two players earning their first caps, basically. And I was a bit surprised, and it just seems a baffling decision to me.
You could say it was trial by fire, but it was really more trial by ice. We had made mention as well of 24-year-old Alan Cruz, who in 2019 has started all Gold Cup games and who might add some youth to the team. However, in 2021, in that Gold Cup then, he only started the B-team game, so he became a bit doubtful as a starter. And here, Cruz really didn't even make the bench. He was called up only for Game 7, where he sat on the bench and was not selected otherwise.
Right, and that that completes the central midfield. Let's go out to the wings. And we had toted Ariel Lassiter as the almost the default left midfielder. However, that didn't come to pass, and the role was filled by various players in the first few games. Ariel Lassiter, as we said, held the role in the Gold Cup. He started Game 1 here, but not after that. In Game 2, Ronald Matarrita, the left back, moved up to left midfielder. It was Jimmy Marin in Game 3 who had started as a right midfielder in Game 1. And then Johan Venegas, we can say, if anyone kind of occupied the position, did so for the three games there. So except for Matarrita, all of these players, Leal, Lassiter, Marin, and Venegas, diminished from starter from being a starter at the beginning of the qualification to a substitute, then to an unused substitute, then to not being selected. So Ariel Lassiter was gone by Game 3, and only Venegas survived until the end, though he earned just 4 minutes of play in the last two games. 17-year-old Jewison Bennett was brought into the position for the last two games. His first, though, had been on the bench for games 1 and 3, so a new player to the squad there. And Randall Leal started games 1 and 2, and though he's classified as a left midfielder, he played more centrally in game 2 and as an attacking right midfielder in game 3. Since his first cap in 2018, he's never really become a permanent fixture in the team, but he's proven to be more of a utility midfielder, kind of filling in holes when needed, as seems the case in these games. So a real mishmash there in the left midfield, and I wouldn't say we have anyone who we could say is the starting left midfielder, Connor.
No, it's been very experimental and perhaps changed a little bit as the formation changed. The right midfield position was a little less frenetic than the left side, thanks to the stability of Joel Campbell. But he only started half the games in that position, kind of in the middle, games 3, 4, 5, and 7. And then he was moved to a forward role in game 8. Four different players held the position otherwise. Left midfielder Jimmy Marin in game 1, left midfielder Ronald Leal in game 2, right back Keisher Fuller in game 6, and Aaron Suarez in game 8. And we've discussed the first three of these players in their usual positions. Game 8 also saw the selection of another young player, a 19-year-old Aaron Suarez, who had subbed into Game 7 for his first cap in that final game where he was a starter, though he was subbed out at halftime. Alonso Martinez, who played the position for two games in the Gold Cup, was not selected for the first three and then was injured after that, preventing his selection.
Okay, so yeah, Aaron Suarez is another new name, but only came in Game 8 as a starter. So we'll have to see down the road whether he works his way into the team. And now we'll move on to the forward lines. We include attacking midfielders among the forwards. And one of their bigger names, Brian Ruiz, is there. Actually, the central attacking midfielder position exists in only some formations. It's otherwise filled by mostly defensive midfielders. And that's part of the reason they're seen as such a defensive and low-scoring team. But when the attacking midfielder position is used, it's 36-year-old Brian Ruiz with 138 caps now who fills it. We had felt that he was aging and would actually be more of a sub in this round of qualifiers. However, he was used more than expected, starting four of the games, as well as subbing into the first and last game. Elias Aguiar, who I actually cheered in a lot in the last podcast, I was playing in South Korea, where I lived. He played for Incheon United. He seems the only other candidate labelled as an attacking midfielder, even though he was sometimes used on the left wing. However, his last appearance was in September 2019, so he seems to be off the team. He's 30 years old, so, could still come back into the picture. And forwards.
Yeah, so Costa Rica had a lone forward all the way up until Game 8 when midfielder Joel Campbell moved up to form a two-man strike force. A 19-year-old Manfred Ugalde earned his second cap by starting the first game of this round, but his reign was short-lived. He was an unused substitute in the second game and off the team after that. Jonathan Moya played the position for games 2, 3, 4, and 6. He had been a likely candidate actually for the Gold Cup, but was not selected because he was under quarantine, presumably from COVID. He scored no goals though, and then was not called up for game 7 and 8. Game 5 saw Jose Guillermo Ortiz in the starting role. He was out with coronavirus for game 6, but also started 7 and 8. However, he scored no goals either. He had started game 1 in the Gold Cup, but lost his starting position, though, you know, potentially getting back into the squad kind of very recently. 21-year-old Jurgens Montenegro was a substitute in the first three games, but was not called up afterwards. His first cap had been in the Nation League finals in June, but he was not selected for the Gold Cup. Given the lack of options up front, we speculated that some past players may return. Jonathan McDonald and Mayron George have not appeared since 2019, and Marcos Urania since early 2020. However, Alvaro Saborio made a surprise return after more than 3-year absence to sub into Game 6 against the United States for the last 6 minutes. Strangely, he was not called up otherwise.
Right, so a real mess there up front. Up front, and we saw in Game 8 they brought in or brought up Joel Campbell as the forward, but really among all of those players that we listed there, we can't say anyone is a starting forward. Any comments on that?
No, I agree. And, you know, the fact that they've scored just 6 goals in 8 games and have been shut out a couple times, I mean, it speaks to that. It is clearly a problem area for them. A couple guys they've tried haven't got the return, and now it seems like, you know, they're trying to put the next man in, trying to get the right formula, trying to find someone who can help them put the ball in the net. But despite a lot of players coming in, no one's really, you know, seems to have kind of cemented the spot. So they do need to sort that out quickly.
Yeah, we mentioned, let me see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, nine forwards there, and none of them were on the score sheet there. I did mention the guy getting the late goal, the extra time, sorry, injury time goal against Honduras was a guy called Gerson Torres, and he actually returned from a bit of an absence. He only appeared in game eight and for 12 minutes as a substitute. So that's really not where you want to be getting your goals from. I think it's a bit of a desperate situation there. Let's go with a default lineup. Yeah, sorry, the default lineup. So we look at the at least the clear starters in each position. And do you want to take? Oh no, we that's why I'm confused. We wanted to do a quick section on new players here. So we have this at the end where we look at any key substitute. Actually, all the key substitute have been mentioned in the course of the discussion. So usually those are players who sometimes start. And then if they're not starting, they come in as a substitute. I don't see any real new names on the key substitute players. However, I'm interested in talking about the new players that have shown up. Do you want to talk about that, Connor?
Sure. So Costa Rica has introduced a few new players, but they do seem a bit reluctant to use them. In game seven, they did bring in a handful of young players, but perhaps used too many all at once. Forwards Manfred Ugalde and Jurgens Montenegro had been chosen for the preliminary squad in 2021 for the Gold Cup and were involved in the first two and three games, respectively, but both then were dumped from the squad. Jewison Bennett was on the bench for two of the first three games, but then off the squad until coming back to start the last two games. Orlando Gallo also started the last two games. His first cap for Costa Rica was in game four, where he was just briefly subbed in. Houston Salas also joined the team in game four, but was on the bench for all matches but his start in game seven. Aaron Suarez joined the team in game seven and got his first cap as a sub. He started game eight, but then was subbed out at halftime. So, there are new players in and around the squad, but they have been used kind of sparingly and somewhat inconsistently.
Yeah, I mean, there's a bit of a pattern there. There was some there's kind of one class who was used at the beginning, and these are not just these players we have just listed, but other kind of players in their mid-20s, players like Alan Cruz in the central midfield, and the who's the left midfielder I'm thinking of. Anyway, you know. Players in that in their mid-20s who are used and then kind of discarded. So that's kind of one class of new player. And the other one is from game seven, they seem to bring in a whole whack of players and use some of them. Some of them were on the bench. So we'll have to see if they're going to make inroads into the team. But it was a bit of a sudden change. Against Canada, maybe the veterans didn't want to play in the cold. We also usually do a section on notably absent, but we've kind of covered those above. So we're going to move on to the default lineup here. Okay, take it away, Connor.
All right, so in net, Keylor Navas still seems to be the first choice. Central defenders, as we said, they settled on Francisco Calvo and Oscar Duarte. Left back has been shared by Brian Oviedo and Ronald Matarrita, but then right back is Ricardo Blanco, the name they seem to be using most. Defensive midfielders or central midfielders are Yeltsin Tejeda and Celso Borges. There's no clear starter in the left midfield, as we saw, though Joel Campbell does seem to get the start on the right. And then up on the front, Brian Ruiz has been involved as an attacking midfielder. But then for forwards, again, there's really no clear starter for Costa Rica that's emerged so far.
Right. So I hope I haven't sounded too cynical here in going over this, but I gotta say, I really am kind of cynical because I feel like Costa Rica has a problem that's been obvious for a while, and they don't seem to be doing anything in the direction of solving that problem. Would you agree?
Yeah, I would. You don't really want to be experimenting too much for such important games, as these World Cup qualifiers that they're playing now, but they've kind of been left with little choice but to kind of experiment as they go, and that's perhaps affecting their results. And we'll take a look now at who their what their prospects are for their six remaining games. And I think right off the bat, they're home to Panama. They trail Panama by 5 points for the final intercontinental spot, and that's do or die for them. I think they have to win that game. Do you agree?
Absolutely. If they win that game, it'll reduce the point gap to 2 points. And if they lose that game, I can't help but think that they're out of contention for fourth place.
Yeah, they follow that home match against Panama with an away match to Mexico. So, perhaps that highlights even more the need to get 3 points in that Panama game. They still play Mexico, Costa Rica, and the USA. So it's a difficult schedule for them. And with 5 points to make up in six games, it's going to be difficult, and I'm not so sure they can do it.
Yeah, I think you meant Canada there, but yeah, playing the
Oh,
top
right.
three as part of their next six games is no easy task. Although two of them are at home, which helps a little bit.
Yeah, as I mentioned earlier, I mean they haven't, despite being at home, I guess we'll see how that favors them, but they've really seem to have lost ground against those top teams in both the Gold Cup and in this round, here in the Octagon. So I even though they're at home, I think it's a big task, and I'm not so sure that they can kind of count on those as really winnable games.
Yeah, well, I'm not really sure I'm hearing your thrust clearly. So I'm just going to say, get to the point, Connor. Are they going to get into the top four?
No, I don't see Costa Rica doing it. I think there's too much of a gap. If they win against Panama, that will make things interesting and that will give them hope. But going to Mexico right after that, I think is very difficult. I think it's possible, but they've shown a lot of inconsistency. Their only two wins have come against the bottom two sides, and one of those, against winless Honduras, took a very, very late goal. They haven't been convincing. I don't think they score enough goals. So I don't see them making it to the Intercontinental Playoff.
Yeah, on top of it, those two wins were at home, and then their home games are pretty tough playing three of the top four at home in their only remaining home game. So I'm with you on that. I don't think so. I think they've maybe it almost seemed like they suddenly realized their problem with aging in game seven and then went too far in trying to resolve it. We'll see. Maybe these young players will be used and make a difference. But I kind of feel the pattern has been let's bring in a couple of young players, try them out, and then just cast them off to the side and go back to veterans. And I don't think they can keep doing that. So I honestly feel like maybe they should use these remaining games to work on rebuilding the team. There's not a lot of chance of them actually making the World Cup this time, but perhaps they can start the rejuvenation process and become more competitive in the upcoming Gold Cups and in the next round, the next World Cup qualification.
Yep, I agree with you there.
Okay, well, there's a chance that we're not right, and Costa Rica can kind of turn things around, but we're not really pegging them for being competitive in the top four here. And I think that takes us to the end of the podcast, does it?
It does. So yeah, As I mentioned, if you're looking for any of our earlier podcasts, you can find it on our website. That's Soccer Files, Soccer Files with a PH, .captivate.fm. You can also search or just Google Soccer Files Canada, and we're the first page that pops up, so you can find us that way as well. And that has all of our previous podcasts for CONCACAF and other regions.
Great. Well, thanks so much, Connor. You're a great co-host, and it's been good doing this with you.
Yeah, we'll see you next time.
Okay, see you.